Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcasts, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Wherever you may be, traveling, on a jog, whatever it might be, thanks for joining us here on Trending. As of May 2021, porn sites received more website traffic in the United States, did you know this, than Twitter, Instagram, Netflix, Pinterest, and LinkedIn combined. We tend to think that only boys and men look at porn, but a growing and high number of young girls and women are not only impacted by widespread porn use, but are negatively impacted by their own porn use. We'll discuss this in just a little bit with Sister Tina Alfieri, who is a recovery coach, addiction specialist, and has keen insights into the crisis today of women, young women, and porn. In celebrity news last week, singer Nick Jonas and actress Priyanka Chopra welcomed a new baby via surrogacy. Now, it was interesting because the feminist writer, I'll get to that in just a little bit, a feminist writer has criticized surrogacy in the wake of this celebrity announcement. And it's fascinating to see that even a pretty radical feminist is criticizing this trend, not just among celebrities to turn towards surrogacy, but even a cultural trend we see today in the face of fertility crisis. So stay with me, a lot to be discussed, especially the pro-life perspective, the Catholic perspective, and more, especially the perspective impacting women when it comes to surrogacy, in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, you name it, we will touch all of this. So today on Trending, I really do want to touch on and focus on what's happening surrounding women and pornography, because I think this is a major issue in our country. And I'm going to cite some statistics that are what I would argue just barely scratching the surface today when it comes to women and pornography, because as we've seen with COVID and the pandemic, more people at home, more people on their devices, pornography statistics have just increased. So what's happening right now is, let's look a little bit at this. So it's not just an issue for people of no faith at all. It's actually an issue for people of faith as well. In fact, 50% of Christian women say that they watch porn at least once a month. That's more than 1 in 10 Christian women, just Christian women, say that they themselves are also watching pornography. So we have to turn to ourselves, recognizing that it's not just people without faith, it's people in the pews, people alongside us, perhaps family members we have. Now, here's another interesting piece of information. When talking to students, it's known now that roughly 30% of students have actually said that they viewed pornography before their teenage years. That is, they viewed pornography before they even became a teenager. So a very young adolescent. We see the average age of first-time exposure to pornography is anywhere between 8 years and 11 years. Now, surveys conducted by the Barna Group in the U.S. have then also shown that, again, this is old data, we're looking at about 8 years old now, which pornography issues have only increased now. We're seeing that now the following percentage of women say they view pornography at least once a month. Almost 8 out of 10 women in the age group between 18 and 30 view pornography. 8 out of 10 women almost. We're seeing 76%. We're almost 8 out of 10 women between the age 18 and 30 look at pornography at least once a month. Now, we see 16% of women between the ages of 31 and 49 years old also look at pornography. These numbers are staggering. Now, we don't have as much data on minor use of technology, but if we're seeing between the ages of 18 and 30 that almost 8 out of 10 women are looking at pornography, we know that younger and younger, the stats are very, very high among teenagers. To this day, I even have a hard time wrapping my mind around the fact that indeed females are looking at pornography. We tend to think this is more of a struggle for young boys and men. We don't even like to think about the fact that minors struggle with looking at pornography. But the reality is that pornography is an issue, and perhaps we've done a disservice to young women by not talking enough about the impact it has on them today. Joining me now is Sister Tina Alfieri. She's a certified sexual addiction therapist and a recovery coach for addictive disorder. She works on the front line addressing the issue of pornography. You can find her and her work at Bloom for Catholic Women, which is actually an organization specifically helping women who have been betrayed by their spouses looking at pornography and working to heal the wounds. But today we're talking about the use of teenagers and pornography. Sister Tina, welcome to Trending.
Hi, Timmarie. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Why are girls and women looking at pornography? It seems like such an anomaly as a culture that we would see that this is something that women are doing. We kind of just assume it's more of a tendency of men and boys.
Well, I don't think it's been an anomaly for a long time. I think that actually women have been making gains on looking at porn, kind of catching up with men. A lot of this has to do with women being curious as to, well, why is my significant other, my husband, my brother, whoever, why are they spending so much time looking at porn? What is it that they're seeing? Maybe I need to check this out for myself. A lot of young children, unfortunately, the ages that children are exposed to porn is getting younger and younger. The average age in the United States is 10. So some children are getting exposed accidentally to porn on the internet when they're home doing their homework on the computer in their own family's home. And some of it is they're not looking for porn necessarily, but they do come across it because the way that the pornography industry works is there are lots of similar sounding websites to what people might be doing a common internet search for. And unbeknownst to them, some pornography websites are very similar to government websites, Christian websites, and they do that intentionally to try to lure or have people unknowingly click on a website that they think is a legitimate website, and then all of a sudden all of these pornographic images come up. And for children especially, it's, you know, overwhelming. It's like, well, what is this? Many times they don't understand what they're looking at, or it's a mixture of maybe they do understand. So there's shame mixed with curiosity. Did I really see what I thought I saw? Let me go look again. So there's just all sorts of reasons as to why women, young girls specifically, are just exposed to porn just like young male children are. But then also for women, sometimes they hear that this is what men want, and so let me go look for myself. Sometimes women also are trying to please a significant other, And the significant other oftentimes will ask them to watch porn together. And
yes.
For many women, it's something that they don't want to do, but yet they want to please their significant other, their spouse, their mate. And so they do it just to please their husband or their boyfriend. They're not that into it. But we do know that over time, being exposed to porn desensitizes us.
Right.
And so even though maybe someone's not really, quote, into it at the beginning, given enough time, just like with any other addictive substance, there's going to be problems with it.
I really want to summarize what you just said, because it's so easy as a culture to be naive. And, you know, I even want to write it off myself, because, and I think this is what's so hard and why we're not talking about it, to actually think that women do not look at pornography, because it is even more embarrassing in a certain respect for women who have looked at pornography. It's very hard for those women. I've worked and faced firsthand many women who come up to me and they'll say time and time again, thank you for mentioning that pornography is an issue for women.
For women,
and I've faced so many young girls in particular who have really struggled with pornography. So to summarize my question, which I think is the same question so many people have who are listening right now, why are women and girls looking at pornography? You mentioned exposure. You mentioned curiosity because it's something the boys are looking at. You've mentioned the sexualization of women and essentially the pressure women are in under. But that also includes the television, movies, and music that we're hearing that is blatantly sexual and vulgar, that kind of already creates an arousal itself. And then you also mentioned, you know, it's a matter of trying to please what men are asking for, because men are asking for things that are outrageous and violent and harmful and aren't normal acts engaged in the marital act. And then I'll just add one more. It's something that today we're seeing medical professionals, shockingly, are actually advising young women to do in order to help relieve anxiety and stress. And we actually just talked about this with yours and my dear friend Jim O'Day from Integrity Restore, which is a partner organization with Bloom for Catholic Women. So we'll include a link in the podcast notes for that conversation where we kind of debunk the medical recommendation for pornography that is absolute hogwash. But Sister Tina, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. Joining me now is Sister Tina Alfieri, and she is a certified sexual addiction therapist and a recovery coach for addictive disorders. Everything you just mentioned is, I think, an eye-opener for many people sitting here right now. We don't like to listen to the fact that girls and women are struggling with pornography as well. A couple more kind of shocking, I would argue, statistics. And just looking at some of the numbers, I saw a study that said that a quarter of married women say that they watch porn at least once a month. All of this said, it's evident that pornography is an issue in marriage, out of marriage, and especially for the younger demographic between the teenage years all the way up to 30 in particular. What are warning signs of porn use for teenagers and even younger than teenagers, and what can be done?
Certainly. So I really suggest, strongly suggest, that parents have parental controls and lockouts on their children's computers, their home computer that anyone has access to in the home, their cell phones. There are parental lockouts for Xboxes, PlayStations, because a lot of parents don't understand that you can access the internet through PlayStation and Xbox. They think, oh, you just play games on this. Many parents don't understand that there is a way, and it's not too difficult, to connect on the internet through Xbox and PlayStation. So parents need to be very technologically savvy. And true, it doesn't even take that much. There are plenty of how-to videos on YouTube about how to lock down your computers, how to monitor, get software that is anti-porn, that's porn blocking or monitoring software, so you can follow up and get reports on what sites are being looked at by your children. And for anyone under the age of 18 in the household, male or female, I would strongly encourage that the parents be able to know what your children are looking at, know what they're viewing, know how to put parental controls and lockouts and whitelists and blacklists and all these other technological issues, to know how to do that on computers and cell phones and Xbox and PlayStations.
And just to be clear here, Sister Jean Alfieri, who, while at the same time is a certified sexual addiction therapist and a recovery coach for addiction disorders, is also a hermit and nun. So if a hermit and nun knows, understands, and gets the way that pornography is getting into your children's room, and she's telling you how, I think it's very important to listen and understand that she's working firsthand with minors, teenagers, adults who are struggling with this, who have been struggling with it for years, and she's telling you how to help keep your kids safe. And a little teaser for next week, Tuesday on Trending, joining me will be Melanie Hemp from ScreenStrong.com. And she speaks to the importance of helping to preserve our kids, their future, in the face of technology use. And we're not just talking about because of pornography exposure, but because of the harm of media and its impact on the brain today. So we'll explain more of that next week on the show, but I think this is really important that we understand there are solutions and there are many areas in which we have to be aware of where pornography is sneaking into our culture, from music to TV to curiosity to ongoing exposure. I'll never forget just driving in the car with my brother and my now husband one day, I remember something came across the screen of my brother's phone. I'm like, what on earth is that? And he said, Timory, if I just go on to the search tab on my Instagram, if I'm just looking at the basic feed, this stuff comes up. It's everywhere. And you have to have, so the three of us had this conversation about how, as a man in particular, you have to have enough willpower to not go down that rabbit hole where men are more naturally visually stimulated and they tend to go there more easily. It might be a little harder for women. That's our assumption. But the exposure is so frequent and embedded in our culture that many young girls today are struggling with this. And we're seeing it come out the way they dress and the way that they are performing for others, even when they wish not to. Sister Tina, if someone's struggling with looking at pornography, whether they believe it's an outright addiction, whether it's impacting their behavior day to day, or it's even just occasional once a month, what should they do?
Okay, fantastic. So these suggestions I'm going to give are for people who might be what we call casual porn users. Maybe they can take it or leave it, but they've having more of a difficult time leaving it. Because there is a difference between casual porn users, just like someone who has a glass of wine occasionally versus someone who's an alcoholic. So someone who's addicted to porn, these might not work. But if it's a casual porn user, and they are wanting to work on increasing the virtue of chastity. This is a Catholic radio show. I love talking about the virtues, and this goes along with the virtues of chastity, purity, and honesty. So the first thing I would suggest is frequent reception of the sacraments. Please, maintaining a state of grace, to maintain one's state of grace, helps to ward off the temptations. It helps to make us stronger. So frequent reception of the Eucharist, frequent confession, and lots of prayer, staying in a state of grace as much as one can. The next thing I would suggest is, yes, going to confession whenever there is a fall or a slip or engaging in the use of pornography, please go to confession. You're not going to shock any priest. I was just talking to my priest earlier today about appearing on your show, Timory, and he said, even, yes, he's very aware that the number of women confessing to looking at pornography, even with his time in the confessional, it has been going up and it's on an increase. So you're not going to shock any priest. You're just not. So I like to say kind of get over yourself. If you, if you've done the activity, man up, so to speak, get in there, take some humility, accept the reconciliation that Christ offers, acknowledge what you've done, and get back on the right track. I think also, for people who are having very problematic issues, prayer must be included in your daily regimen of how to take care of yourself spiritually, having prayer time with God. I love the St. Michael prayer. I love the rosary. Again, anti-porn software. There's porn blocking software. Some of the major names that are out there, Net Nanny, Covenant Eyes. There's also others that are out there. Those are just some of the major ones, but you can do a Google search and look. Some of them are very inexpensive, like $5.99 a month. Others with maybe other options might be $9.99 a month. But it helps to have the porn blocking software. It puts a speed bump. I call it a speed bump between just picking up your cell phone or your laptop and clicking on porn. If you've got porn blocking software, it puts speed bumps up. It's going to slow you down, so it gives you time to think, what am I doing? Do I really want to do this? Maybe I don't want to do this. And it gives you just some space to change the behavior, turn off the cell phone, put it down, or shut down the computer and walk away. So I think frequent reception of the sacraments, maintaining a state of grace, frequent prayer, and also porn blocking software. These are things just to begin with. If you think you're a casual user and you're having difficulty putting the porn down, this is where I would start.
Okay, so many incredible resources, and we'll summarize those in just a moment, because I think it's so important to help in using these resources when so many people are struggling silently, especially for men and women. And it seems like such a stigma to even say something out loud about it. So again, we're talking about the crisis that many young women are facing surrounding pornography use themselves. We're going to come in just a minute to the impact of porn use on women when they know that men are looking at it as well, but we'll get there in just a moment. Before we do, Sister Tina, and actually we'll have to come back on this because it's a really fascinating stat that I think it connects into the crisis we're seeing in the culture surrounding the identity issue. So we'll be right back here on Trending with Sister Tina Alfieri. Again, she's a certified sexual addiction therapist and recovery coach for addictive disorders. And we're talking about the impact of pornography use on women. We're also going to come back talking about celebrity news surrounding Jonas Brothers, surrogacy, and even a feminist lashing out against how surrogacy is hurting women and the poor. I'll explain the Catholic take and the impact it has on women. Solidarity HealthShare now offers a new program called Solidarity One. With Solidarity One, members decide what healthcare options best fit their needs and with the flexibility to meet any budget. Learn more at CatholicHealthShare.com.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Coming up, we will be discussing the trend, not just in the celebrity world, but among many people today surrounding surrogacy, even in the wake of the news of Nick Jonas and actress Priyanka Chopra having welcomed a new baby via surrogacy, as a feminist writer has lashed out in criticism of surrogacy. We'll talk about the Catholic take, the impact on women, and how this is a really important topic for the pro-life movement in face of the infertility crisis. Now, we've been discussing the impact of pornography on girls and women. If you don't know the numbers, the statistics are staggering. Essentially, almost 8 out of 10 women between the ages of 18 and 30 years old view pornography at least once a month. We could dive into many of the stats, but the point here is to really understand that whether it's 1 in 4 women within the context of marriage who are looking at pornography, or especially that age group between minors and 30, where we have very high pornography use numbers, it's an issue not just for boys, but for women as well. Now, Sistina, we'll recap on some of the solutions for girls who are struggling with pornography, but before we go there, I wanted to briefly get your thoughts on one stat that was very interesting to me. So we know that there's a trend today surrounding many young girls between the teenage and college years suddenly coming out as transgender over the last 3 years. What I found fascinating in my research is that according to Pornhub, which is one of the leading pornography websites in the world, their own analytics have actually recorded that in 2018, right around before the trend of an increase in the transgender craze, the top search in terms of a type of pornography was actually lesbian pornography. And I mention this because I'm wondering, as a clinician, do you believe there's a connection to the increase of the many young girls coming out as transgender today?
That's a great question, Timory. And for me, from my perspective, I don't see that there is a link with that. I want to point out that I think that statistic regarding the most searched for porn term being lesbian, I think that that's probably due to, number one, the majority, it's still overwhelming men who look at porn, even though women are making gains in this area, it's still overwhelmingly a male search population that's doing these searches. Mm-hmm. So, and there's always been this myth, this mystique about men being interested in women having sex with women. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily make a connection between the transgender quote unquote craze being linked to more searches for the phrase lesbian. I do, however, think that there is a link that in the teenage years, in the adolescent years, people try on all different kinds of personalities, all different kinds of looks, all different kinds of behaviors. And I think that there's a population out there that is attention seeking, young adults, adolescents, young adults who are maybe attention seeking, and this is a way to get that attention. I think for some, it's no more different than, I'm going to date myself here, when we had the punk rockers. Some people really got into dressing and behaving and the culture of punk rock, and then it transitioned into goth and grunge. And so I think that sometimes it's seen as a trend. It's trendy. It's something I can try on, like a different color nail polish or a different hair color.
Right. It's a new anorexia or bulimia as well for many
people. Yes, at times it's just something to draw attention to oneself. Mm-hmm. It's about a desire to be noticed.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Add this sexual disorientation that many people have today because of pornography and because of the culture and exposure. All of that together is creating this cocktail for difficulty for young women today in their sexual identity.
So we all want to be noticed and validated, and some that noticing can be healthy, such as, you know, going through sports, becoming a great athlete, an academic, an artist, whatever. But then sometimes it's through attention seeking type behavior that people satisfy that need, that I want to be noticed, I want to be seen.
And, you know, I even think about this in my own teen years. And grant, the dancing world has become extremely sexualized today, but I grew up classically trained, ballet, jazz, tap, West Coast swing, ballroom, all of that, even hip hop and break dancing. My family gets a kick out of it when I bust out some break dancing moves and spin on my head for some of the kids now. They're like, wait, what? But I think about it, how helpful dance was when you mentioned this for, you know, kind of for that desire for women. We have such a deep desire to be seen, to be known, to be loved and admired, and how for me that was channeled through dancing, through having the activity of performing and dancing in a wholesome, healthy way, and how important that is that you just mentioned that kids have a means of doing that, and that above all else, that they're being seen, known, loved, and admired by their parents to help mediate this crisis today. I want to come back. I know we went on a little bit of a side tangent there, but let's talk about the impact of porn use on women. And I'm not only speaking of what we just discussed, how many women today are looking at pornography, but how the impact of men and boys looking at pornography has led to extreme pressure for young women to perform in ways intimately that they never should have or would have or is healthy or safe. It's led them to dress or be willing to say yes to things they otherwise wouldn't do. I mean, even just, I was reading an article earlier today, a mom of a 14-year-old girl, and this is normal for kids between the ages of as young as 11 and 14 to be asked by boys, not just boys that they may or may not be dating, but by boys in general, to send them nude photos or to send photos to them asking for something in return. And so what we're facing is a crippling amount of pressure for young women today, and I'll say as young as the age of 8 and up, to look perpetually hot, available, and to perform when asked. Sister Tina, what is the psychological impact that we're seeing for these girls, and how can they make their way out of it?
Well, I think it's just shows how insidious this kind of the porn industry trickles down through other forms of media. You were talking earlier about music videos and also R-rated films. So pornography for many is not that much of a further step. We've already been desensitized through what is coming through our TVs, through music videos or R-rated movies that we can get on HBO or Netflix. And it seems so casual and usual that we're just desensitized, so that when it comes to pornography, for many people, it's just not that much more big of a deal. It's this slippery slope that we've been sliding down for a very long time. Now, for the pressure for young girls or young women to always look sexually attractive, sexually available, that I do believe a lot of it does come from men watching porn. We have to remember that men are watching the porn. They are seeing how these women, the porn actresses, how they look, how they behave, what they are wearing, what they are doing. And young men who are very impressionable, they think that's what sex is. They think that's what love is. They think that's what a normal married romantic Christian relationship is, and nothing could be further from the truth. And so the boys or the young men are getting misinformation, and then they're pressuring the girls, and the girls are thinking, well, this must be what he wants, and I really want to be with him if he, you know, wants me to dress a certain way. What's wrong with that? And I'm sure that everybody out there remembers being young, being a tween or an adolescent, and the competition again for a boyfriend, for a girlfriend. You know, it's a time where we're competing, so to speak, with others for the affections, for the attention. Again, we're back to the attention, the validation of others, and it becomes where we will do practically anything to get that. And we have to remember that at these young ages, these are children. They do not have well-formed consciences. They do not have well-formed minds. Their brain is not developed until age 25, it's not fully developed. So they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know that it's all fake and fantasy and not reality. And so they're just really at a loss. They're engaging in this stuff, thinking this makes them adult, or it makes me desirable, or if it gets me a boyfriend, and having a boyfriend means I'm an adult or I'm a teenager, well, then that's what I want. So then that's what I do. There's so many things that are tied up in this. It's really difficult to tease it all apart. It's about acceptance. It's about being seen, being known, having an identity, having someone desire you as much as maybe you desire them. But they're going about it in many, many wrong ways.
That's Sister Tina Alfieri here on Trending with Tim Ray, a certified sexual addiction therapist and a recovery coach for addictive disorders. We're talking about the impact of pornography on young girls today. Again, this constant pressure to be hot, available, and to constantly perform, even if it's just via requests that are being made via text message and phone, not necessarily in person. It's so important that we see the full scope and reality from the way girls are pressured to dress and so much more, which is part of the leading cause of why so many young girls are themselves looking at pornography as well. And Sister Trina, it also brings to mind the challenge that many young girls, as well as young women, face today in just the fact that a lot of them aren't willing or able or feel comfortable to speak up for themselves when something uncomfortable happens because they think it's normal or they're so uncomfortable and embarrassed to say, one, I'm struggling to look at pornography, or two, someone touched me inappropriately or made a really inappropriate comment to me that was not just inappropriate in general, but inappropriate given the giant age gap between the two of us. And the difficulty is so strong for young women today that we need to have these conversations so that when we talk about women's empowerment, we're empowering young girls and women to speak up and not tolerate any of this pervasive pornographic culture that truly is hurting women today. Now, Sister Tina, how can we help to heal marriages after the betrayal of pornography?
So when a spouse, either male or female, becomes aware that their significant other, their spouse, is viewing pornography, it's really vital that there's an open conversation between the two and that there are some boundaries set. And this can be very uncomfortable if you don't feel that you can have an open conversation with your spouse about this. I encourage you, go see your priest, go have a counseling session together with your priest, or to seek out a marriage and family therapist, someone who is Catholic, someone who specializes in treating infidelity or betrayal, because unfortunately, there are many secular therapists out there who do prescribe watching pornography together to enhance things in the bedroom. And it's like, no, not Catholic, not Christian.
And
So
not
you want
helpful.
to, not helpful. So
Not
you want
long
to make
term,
sure,
especially.
so you want to make sure you're going to a Catholic source of help, or at least a very Christian source of help where pornography is not something that is used as a marital aid because it does not aid marriages whatsoever. It just does not.
Amen.
So
And
for
then
women,
resources for people to turn to as well.
yes. So for women, I strongly encourage Bloom for Catholic women. You can do a Google search for Bloom for Catholic women. There are message boards there for women who are going through the recovery of their husband watching pornography. for men, there are starting to be more helpful websites for men whose wives are the addict. I think one of the best is S Anon. That's a capital S hyphen A-N-O-N, S Anon. That's for partners of sex addicts. And there
we'll include
some
a
great
link to that in the podcast notes too, if you didn't catch that, and we'll post them on social media as well.
And so, you know, just like at the beginning of pornography addiction, recognizing pornography as an addictive disorder, most of the recovery literature that was written for recovering porn addicts was written for men as the audience. It was written by male addicts for an overwhelmingly male recovery community. Well, now women are struggling with porn. There is more recovery literature being written by women in sexual addiction recovery for women trying to recover from pornography addiction as well. So, you know, we're catching up as far as having resources available for female sex addicts or pornography addicts, because sometimes the books that are written by men for male sex addicts just aren't helpful for women sex addicts. They're not touching on some of these questions of, well, I got started watching it because my husband wanted me to, and now I can't stop.
That resource, Bloom for Catholic Women, S-A-N-O-N as well, SANON.org. We'll include links in the podcast notes for today's show. And please go back, listen to this podcast and resources for how to recover from pornography use. Incredible tips. That's Sister Tina Alfieri. Thank you so much for joining us on Trending. We'll come back talking about surrogacy and celebrity news. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school-at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, so I have been wanting to talk about this all week. The story in the celebrity world doesn't fall far from the reality of day-to-day life for many of us. We know that the struggle of infertility is on the rise for many couples today. And you may have heard the news from this past week that another celebrity couple has shared the news that they have a baby. Out of nowhere. That is Nick Jonas, the singer from, you know them, the Jonas Brothers, and Priyanka Chopra, who is an actress. They welcomed a new baby via surrogacy. They announced this last week. They've been talking about wanting to start and grow a family. Well, here they did it out of nowhere. No one knew that this was coming. Well, there's a reason why, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But in the wake of their news, feminist writer has slammed them on social media. Now, she didn't directly criticize them, but specifically the issue of surrogacy as a whole. And so it's interesting to hear because she's a feminist poet and novelist, Taslima Nasreen. She's Bangladeshi, and she actually left India because she herself was being censored for her opinions. Now, she, being very, very much so a radical feminist, not the type of pro-woman, pro-life perspective we would have, has actually criticized surrogacy because of its impact on women and the poor. She said, surrogacy is possible because there are poor women. She goes on to criticize surrogacy as a problem because it hurts poor women and that we love things that make it easy for us to enjoy life through the use of preying upon the poor. And that we want the poor essentially to stay where they're at so that we can have the things we would like. Essentially, she's called this That is surrogacy and exploitation of women and the poor. See, surrogacy has become a popular choice among celebrities and the wealthy. You have Alec and Hilaria Baldwin, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew Broderick, Nicole Kidman and Keith Urban. Those are just a handful of people who have turned and chosen surrogacy. Even Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, who identify as gay but still wanted to have a child, and by the way, that's not possible. So to have the child somewhat related to them, they use a surrogate, and that is a woman's egg outside of themselves. Now, even people such as model Tyra Banks has discussed issues with infertility as her reason for choosing surrogacy, but many also express surrogacy is just better for their lifestyle, their career. I actually knew a couple of women at a church I went to who were known as great Catholics who all of a sudden out of nowhere would have one baby and then another. They were never pregnant. They would go and pick the baby up from the hospital because it was just more convenient to not give birth to a baby. The reality is, whether it's for fertility crisis, career, not wanting to go through the process of carrying a child to term, surrogacy is a part of our culture today. And I think that this is a challenge facing the pro-life movement, because if you didn't know, abortion is usually, often, a part of the entire in vitro fertilization, artificial insemination, and surrogacy process itself. And although there may be a lot of altruism and love and generosity going into the attempt, at least on the part of some surrogates, to help some people who can't otherwise have children, or maybe some people who are poor and do need the money and they're volunteering to be surrogates, I've run face to face with the issue of surrogacy over and over again. I remember one day I was sitting in a coffee shop. And right there next to me, a woman who barely spoke English, who had recently migrated to the nation, maybe specifically brought here for this purpose, was being solicited by a woman who worked, by the way, for a Catholic hospital I knew of, about how she was being solicited to become a surrogate and all the rights she was waving away. Another instance of encountering surrogacy was actually on my wedding day. The woman who was actually at my house to do my hair for my wedding kept having to pause in the middle of getting my sisters and I ready. Why? Because she had to take another set of medication and another set of medication. She kept having alarms go off. Her body was being artificially prepared to carry a child because she was volunteering to become a surrogate. I was so shocked. Here I am early in the morning on the day of my wedding. So joyful and excited to celebrate getting married. And here this woman was sharing that, well, yes, she had a thriving hair business on the side and she was able to be with her children most of the time. And her husband had this great schedule worked out where he could be with them when she wasn't and vice versa. They were obviously trying to do everything possible to be with their kids, to raise their kids, to be around them, to give their children the best possible life, but she still wanted more money. And so she was volunteering to be a surrogate, one, to make the money, but two, to help women who weren't otherwise able to have children. Altruistic, yes, but it was already having a negative impact on her body. Surrogacy is a reality in this culture. Now, it's fascinating to me because I'll even run into people who are pro-life and who, when they hear or know of a story of someone they know and love who had a child via surrogacy, they say, that's okay, that's great, I'm all for it, I know the church isn't okay with it, but you know what, these people otherwise wouldn't have had a child. Or this person I know of wouldn't otherwise exist if it weren't for surrogacy. Trust me, I understand the gift of human life. And just to make a brief caveat, because I think it's important that we understand this, every single child, whether conceived naturally or via in vitro fertilization, is an absolute gift, a life worthy of respect and protection, no matter the means of conception or creation. But what I'm saying is very important. I hope you'll listen. Even though every child is a gift, that doesn't mean that the process of getting there is or was okay. And that's a challenge we face. And this is why we're going to continue to discuss surrogacy over the next week or so here on Trending, because there are many challenges. Oprah had a major cover story in 2020 and 2021 of a woman who couldn't have children. She struggled with infertility, her and her husband. And her own mother volunteered to be the surrogate to carry her grandchild to term so that her daughter could have a child. Another story, such as Jacqueline Schultz, she was the CBS reality TV show Survivor, the competition, Survivor 29. Her and her now husband, John Misch, were on Survivor a number of years ago, and Jacqueline and John Misch are currently going through the process of in vitro fertilization. You may have heard and followed their story in 2020, where they actually lost a baby after their second round of surrogacy at 20 weeks. There was a stillbirth. And now they're in their third round of surrogacy. I'm going to continue to unpack this topic over the next couple of weeks because it's important we understand the low success rate of in vitro fertilization, which is why many people, including people such as the Jonas brothers, Nick Jonas specifically, who didn't announce they were having a new kid until the baby was already born, because surrogacy rates, in vitro fertilization success rates can be very, very low. It's risky. And that's part of the problem and part of why it's not pro-life, because it's playing with human life, putting human life in a situation that is not the normal context of creating and developing the child. And so the success rate of a baby being carried to term is very low. We're being destructive with human life. Not only that, selective reduction, quote, selective reduction is some of the terminology commonly used in artificial insemination, surrogacy, and in vitro fertilization process. That means that when multiple babies that didn't die in the process actually make it into utero and continue to develop weeks and weeks on end, well, they selectively reduce, that is, abort the other babies. These are just some of the topics that scratch the surface of the problem of surrogacy. We're going to talk about the impact on the surrogate, the impact on the woman and the couple, and much more here on Trending next week. So stay with me, because this is a crisis that the people as pro-life need to be able to respond to. Is happiness something that matters to you? This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Every Monday is our happy hour, so why not join us? Dr. Kazel will join me to discuss how psychology and Christianity say the same thing about how to be happy. We identify the challenge of getting enough sleep. Now that we all know we need to sleep more, let's talk about how to sleep better and actually get to sleep. Join me Monday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.